Yes, hello, come on in. It's time once again for your favorite Blue Jays podcast. It's your favorite podcast. We're back.
We are.
It's your favorite podcast. It's Less Than Jays. Thank you so much for being along. It is. We're trying to will a Blue Jays transaction out of the universe. What we've done, we sort of waited, and we like Genesis Cabrera wasn't quite big enough. And then there was the late night Dodgers series, which is like I fall asleep watching baseball, and it's hard for me to mentally take in what's really happening. Trying to will, it's like, oh, it's a Thursday. It's a day off before the trade deadline. If we do a podcast, right? If we hit record on a podcast, we are willing the universe to give us a 1 a.m. transaction or a early Friday morning transaction to render most of what we say here null and void.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be that we would record at like 6 p.m. on a Tuesday, which gave a whole week.
Yes.
To sort of make us our episode relevant, but I feel like now, because it's 10:13 p.m. on a Thursday, it's either going to be a 1 a.m. tonight or like sometime Friday, Saturday.
And yeah,
maybe we'll get some Hug Watch.
It seems like a weird deadline. We will get into some of the stuff that has happened and hasn't happened. Thank you for being along with us. They did make one small move. Wanted to get your thoughts quickly on Genesis Genesis Cabrera.
I heard it as Genesis, but I'm not sure.
Awesome. Even frankly, even better. Genesis works for me. You know, we saw one appearance, and he throws 98, and he throws a slider. Not going to say we called it, but we did have guy who throws hard and throws a slider that we don't know as one of the slots on our list of guys last week. So I think I count that as us getting that right. That's right, right?
Yeah, I think so. And, like, I think it's kind of an interesting idea because, like, at first blush, it's the move that we all hate every year, which is the like guy cut from a bad team.
Yes.
It's the, I've been trying to remember his name all week. Last year, he got cut from Pittsburgh.
And no. I made the same joke three times last year, and I can never tell if the day I made it was the guy we're talking about, or it was one of the. I know exactly what you mean. It's not one of the Hernandez guys, but it was you know this.
I'm trying to comp it now. All I'm getting is AJ Burnett and Ryan Barukian. That's not correct.
That's probably not
Zach Thompson, but it might as well be Zach Thompson. Anthony Banda is who I'm looking for.
That's so funny because I was looking up my tweet reference and trying to figure out like what did I say and can we reverse engineer the name, and it was literally, Jake, is July 14th, 2022 at 10:35 p.m. A year and 2 weeks of the day, and I tweeted, "There's got to be a reliever out there that was cut by a losing team that can solve this."
It's good that things have changed in a year. But what I was going to say about Genesis is, at first glance, I thought that's what this was, and it still might be. I'm certainly not going to go off one inning and be like, "He's awesome," but like he looked pretty awesome, and our good friend Chris Lund, who is a sports knower about her.
He is.
I would say. Was very excited about this. He said he'd had him on his sort of want board for a bit. Based on obviously not what I know, but what our friend Chris has said, because he is more of a prospect guy.
Sure.
Than I am.
Real freak. A real freak, you can say.
Yeah, real freak is the right thing to say. Hold on, let me see if I can just find what he said to me. I know everyone loves when we do this.
Yeah, looking up conversations, it's the best. I will say, while you search for that, I am pitching agnostic. I've said many times, I don't understand pitching, and I'm not going to pretend to understand pitching. But I do know this much about the narrative around Genesis, which is all I ever need when it comes to understanding pitching. He's one of the guys that you fit into the like, well, they're just going to tell him to not throw the pitches he's bad at, right? They're going to be like, oh, he's got a good fastball and a good slider, and they're going to tell him to stop throwing the changeup and the other kind of fastball. And that is the kind of narrative that I can get around in the bullpen especially.
Yeah, and I found what I was looking for here. Lund's notes on him was that something's gone funky with his curve so far this year. And the pitch clock seems to have had a real effect on him. His batted ball profile is like, a lot of the numbers are very different compared to last year and previous years. But if you'd like, I assume this is Baseball Savant. His similar pitchers. One of them is 2021 Alec Manoah. So
there you go. I love that's. I think
that's about as much as I know about Hennessy Cabrera, other than the one inning I saw him pitch where he looked sick as hell.
No, I've been trying to get clean off of Baseball Savant. I've been trying to. I'm trying to go cold turkey, but I will say, you mentioned it there, I think that's my favorite mechanic on that site. It's similar pitchers, similar hitters, because if it doesn't work out in a way that you want, you get to completely ignore it. But if there's one name out of the five that it's like it never fails. There's always a good hitter, at least one hitter, or at least one pitcher that you're like, that profile, I could see slotting in. But
and I will say, yeah, to your point, I agree with you that like a lot of Baseball Savant is very silly. But looking at the circles,
sure,
for our bullpen's purposes, like in a vacuum, having a guy who's in the 82nd percentile for fastball velocity,
it'll do.
You know, especially with Nate being sent down, it's nice to have another guy who sort of profiles a little differently than every other guy in the pen.
What percentile did you say there?
82nd.
He throws 98, no? Like, he was throwing 98 on 82nd.
Yeah. 84th percentile in whiff percentage?
That's bananas. That's just like where we are as a league. A guy comes in and throws 98, and it's like, top 18%. League, it's like, that's crazy.
According to Baseball Savant, it looks like league average is about 93.
Sure. And you're mixing it. Starters and relievers are different.
Yes.
There. But I think raises a bigger point. And we are non-believers in the power of any bullpen at any time. This season, undeniable the bullpen was very good, especially throughout the summer. But I think also undeniable is that like there's been a real tax on these guys with the way that this team has played lately, where it's just like even when they win or when they lose, the bullpen never gets a button of breathing room. And in this last two series against the Dodgers and against the Mariners, I think we saw sort of the bill come due on how, like, I think Swanson's pretty exhausted. I think Romano looks, it hasn't been his strongest, like, section. I think he's a guy that's been used a lot. I think he's tied for the American League lead in saves right now. Richards, right, he's bounced back and forth. Everybody that has been important and has been good, Meza as well, giving up home run recently. Those guys have all been good on the big picture of the year, and I'm not saying they're not going to continue to being good, but I think you can see the need here for them to bring in a guy like Cabrera and for them to start cycling in some extra arms. These guys can't be pitching in high leverage 6 days a week. Like, it's just, yeah, like, even if they're the best bullpen in the league, which they were since the beginning of May, like, it can't be Romano gets five saves a week or, like, Swanson gets out lefties every single, like, this is not tenable. So I think that is another benefit of having a guy like Cabrera come in. You have to cut him, you have to cut him. And, like, you know, I think we've been pretty good on Pearson this year. He got sent back down in this shuffle. And you still, of course, have Chad Green coming back. A lot of questions still for the rotation, or for the bullpen. I just think, yeah, this is a sign of, like, the bullpen needed an extra arm down there right now. Those guys are beat up.
And the sort of the narrative I've seen around the last little couple weeks is the anti-John Schneider brigade and blaming him for the bullpen struggles because he's not leaving the starters deep enough, so everyone's getting tired, is the new sort of thing to hop on, which I don't know if I agree with, but does go to your point that everyone, it's pretty clear that the bullpen is just like totally gassed, and hopefully if Ryu can come back, it's another body, take some, if Green can come back, you know, it's just new, more bodies to take that exhaustion away and hopefully get everyone back to where they need to be for when it matters.
A topic we've talked about a lot this year, and I think was plain and simple front page this weekend and midweek, and I thought was tackled brilliantly by Caitlin McGrath in The Athletic this week, sort of trying to grasp the, like, basically on paper, the Jays are having, we've talked about this a lot, they're having a pretty good year, right? They're going to win 90 games. If somebody from out of town interviewed you about the team, they'd be like, so the Jays are good, right? And you'd be like, well, not really, right? I think everybody sort of agrees it's been a frustrating year, but why is that, right? Why are things so at odds? And I thought Caitlin did a great job, and I want to get your opinion on this. I know you have your own thoughts on why the year has been so... felt so much worse than maybe the numbers tell us that it is her theory was sort of, not to crib the idea here, but it's sort of like every good comes with a but on this team right now. Like every good thing you can point out, there's an equal and opposite but to it, right? It's like you have Kevin Gausman's been very, very good, but Alec Manoah has been very, very bad. So it's like you're not enjoying the thing that's good to the level you can, because there's an equal and opposite thing. It's like, if you look at the offensive numbers, they're top five, top 10 in every meaningful statistical category, but they just so happen to be 28th behind like Pittsburgh and Detroit with those same numbers and runners in scoring position. Like there's the amount of hits that they are getting, the amount of times that they are on base, the quality of their contact, they're a good hitting team. And yet they are like, literally the bottom of the barrel when it comes to runners in scoring position, which is just like a weird, we've always talked about. This is one of the first ever online battles, is like runners in scoring position and clutch isn't real. It'll all normalize. They've had this unbelievable run this year of being at the very bottom of it. So there's the big butt to the light. They have been a good team. They're an increased defensive team, right? They're a better defensive team, but they have made an unbelievable amount of outs on the base paths, and guys like Varsho, who are undoubtedly creating defensive value, have not hit a lick for huge stretches. It's really interesting, and I thought she goes into a much greater detail and explores it with some great stats to back it up. But I thought that was pretty good. I think that jives for me. Where it's like it's hard to really enjoy the really enjoyables, because there is always an equal and opposite thing. You can do it with the bullpen. You can do it with individual players. You can say the catchers. You're like, oh man, Danny Jansen's been the clutchest hitter that could possibly live. But like the other side of this is the catching duo hasn't been what it normally is. You could say Alejandro Kirk has blossomed. Every stat thinks he's an amazing defensive catcher, but suddenly he can't hit at all. It's been really something. All these things, you can do it about Springer, you can do it about Vlad, you can do it about any storyline on this team. You can find the equal and opposite reaction. How does that hit your ears for like being a good explanation as to why things have felt the way they've felt this year?
Yeah, I definitely think that's part of it. And I agree with you. I also really enjoyed that article today. I was kind of thinking about it throughout the day because I knew we were going to talk about it. I think there's a couple things. I think everything you said in terms of sort of the aesthetic of the baseball they play is a big part of it. I think a large part of it, and maybe I'm speaking just for myself, I don't know if other people feel this way as well, or if it's just my thing, but like, I think the fact that they're not a particularly likable team plays into it. Like, going to sort of the, other than my general dislike for like the sort of going to the red ass, no fun guys, I do think that makes the team feel worse just because it's not as fun. Yeah. And the other side of that, I think that's a big part of it. Like, because even when the past couple years the team has struggled, it's been frustrating, but you still really felt like they were our guys and you really wanted to get behind them. I think also it's a fashion of sort of the fact that they're like kind of just hitting their floor. Like the team is built well enough and the players are good enough that like they should be like 12-ish games over 500 at this point in the season. You'd like them to be more, but like they were going to be, I don't think even when we outlined all of our biggest disasters scenarios at the beginning of the season, some of which have come true, this team was ever going to be like, you know, 20 games under 500 in July.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think the fact that the wins have been pretty evenly divided over the last few months plays into it as well, because like they haven't had that big run of games that really galvanizes the fan base. And like I'm thinking back to like 2013, where that team was supposed to be like the first great Jays team in a long time. Mm. And obviously they were a huge disappointment. But in June or July, I forget, they went on an 11-game win streak. And I think the 11th win was a Kawasaki walk-off at home. And, you know, that team really felt like people were really behind them. And they did a similar thing in 2014 when they sort of made a big run in August. And they looked like they might challenge for the wild card spot. And ended up falling off, but they had like some, like another like 10 games win streak, which involved like the 19 inning game kind of thing. And I think because the wins have been sort of evenly spread out without that run, combined with the fact that they're not particularly fun or likable on or off the field, I think it's easy to look at the undeniable underachievement so far. Just because they're hitting their floor doesn't mean they're not underachieving. But all those things combined just kind of like. Like they haven't done anything yet to really excite people, I feel. Like they've started doing that elbow pump.
Yes, they have.
Celebration, and like it looks ridiculous, and some of them look like they don't know exactly what they're doing with it. But I was glad to see, like, something.
I'm glad you touched on that. Because when you talk about the team not being fun, and I've been ruminating on this, because it's something you've hammered in here 3-4 weeks. Not that it's an argument point, but I've been trying to, like, articulate it. I've been trying to, like, hone in on what it is, right? Because you're right, they haven't been that fun. And regardless of they'll win in a really grindy way. And I'm glad you bring up the sort of tiger uppercut or whatever it may be. And, you know, it's one thing to get rid of the home run. Listen, this is home run jacket discourse, I understand. But, like, it's one thing to get rid of, like, oh, the home run jacket is ridiculous. It's another thing to come back the next year and be, like, the only team that doesn't have one.
Yeah.
Right? That's a very stark. It would have been, if they come up with something, or like it's one of those things, right, where you're like, oh man, the home run jacket's ridiculous. And then you see the next year, it's like, oh, half the league was jealous of having a fun idea, and half the league was doing it and coming up with cool ideas of their own. And there was a bunch of fun things. Like, I think it's indicative of that, of sort of, I do think it matters that they are doing something. That I think they recognize that as well when they're trying to turn a vibe around. Yeah, and I really think this past week of games, I think, really almost perfectly articulates it, because I ended this show last week begging them to win the Seattle series. You remember, I was like, I'm very rattled by the Seattle Mariners currently. I can't help it. I just like
every year they make no sense against us, and it's awful.
It's the one team I'm just like, I know they're gonna look like dog shit here. I know it's gonna be the, and it was the two of the worst losses in the season for me so far. And then they somehow, Seattle gives them the Sunday game out of pity, and then of course they turn it around and they beat the Dodgers, right? Because it's a classic example of it's never as bad as it looks and never as good as it looks, sort of thing. But also, it's like, on one hand, your brain is like, okay, they split Dodgers and Mariners, they split it 3-3. That's about as good as even my, you know, caustic depression, that's the best that I would think, basically, is like 3 out of 3 is good for me against those two opponents, given what we, the travel and given the quality of opponent and given the nightmares of Seattle. But also, like, they should have won all 3 Seattle games, and they should have won all 3 Dodgers games, right? It took unbelievable collapses in the Dodgers game, and it took blowing a lead in every single game of the Mariners series to get there. And that is sort of the season writ large to me. It was like, if you were just reading the results, you're like 3-3, and if you watch the games, you're like, this is torture. They should be. And again, there are good teams. So they feel like they should win every game, but they should have gone 5-1 here. I feel like, how did they not go 5-1? I don't understand.
Yeah,
3-3. It just like, and again, I recognize the craziness of how greedy that feels, right? And every team feels their team should win, but there just seems to be something in the water this year where like, you just knew the Seattle series was going to be a disaster the whole time. It's just like, and I don't know. You don't want to get armchair therapist on these guys, and you don't want to get like trying to figure it out, because as soon as they serve you one thing, as soon as they serve you the Seattle series, I almost knew they were going to bounce back and play good against the Dodgers, because it was just like, well, no one's watching this, it's on late at night, they're probably going to look great, and they handle business except for the big blow. So this week is really like cemented for me is like, this is what is up with this team this year, written in one series. And yeah, it was just like, it was 2023 Blue Jays the week right here.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to put it. And I think the sort of, you know, I was kind of expecting to come on here and sort of, I kind of, I don't know if I forgot about it, just blocked it in my brain. But the Seattle series, I wasn't really going to
nightmare
to really talk a lot about. But the Dodgers series, you know, that notion of like, well, they should have swept literally the Dodgers. Because yeah, we had been talking, you know, 2 weeks ago, like, or I said, like, let's see what happens when they play the Dodgers kind of thing. And then they did, and they kicked their ass until they didn't. And I feel like I agree with you. That is sort of the thing. It's that they should have swept the Dodgers.
Beat the Braves. They didn't. Beat the Dodgers. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I definitely, it's been a weird week in terms of that, because I'm now sort of more optimistic than I was a week ago, while also being significantly less. It's very weird. And I want to run an idea by you that I've been thinking about.
Ooh, and love ideas.
This is not an idea that I think the team is thinking about even at all, but I am. What do you think about the advantages of getting the third wildcard spot?
Now, this is the good stuff. Playing the team in the Central, playing maybe the Twins, absolutely. If the run to the top of the division
is, if the division is out of play.
Yes.
Doesn't it move them to play for the third wild card?
They're going to have their chance. Sort of what struck in my mind when you were talking about the 11-game run, and they haven't done anything to inspire us, and they haven't done a lot of things that we need to see them do. I think all those moments are going to happen against AL East teams. If any of the things that we've talked about, the division run that we talked about a couple weeks ago, feeling inspired, feeling like they could be a team that does things, feeling like they could be a team that shows up in big moments, they have the second half of their AL East schedule coming up. They have to win those games. It's just sort of like, it's all well and good to have the measuring sticks against LA and Seattle and have these fun little trips. They got to beat Baltimore and Tampa when they play them. It's that simple. And if they don't, then yeah, third wild card for me. Sign me up. I don't care. I'm anything but playing Seattle in Toronto. I kind of want them to go on the road for the wild card. I feel like that almost fits them better. I almost feel like this team certainly didn't go great.
Didn't go great last year. So,
when that was at home, wasn't it?
Yes, that's what I mean.
Yeah, and 2016 wild card was at home. Right?
Yeah. Yes, it was. So yeah, they've yet to play a wild card game, not at home.
I feel like this team deserves to play three games on the road in the playoffs. I just sort of like, they deserve it. They deserve to know how this feels. We'll see. I guess 2020, did they play? I don't even know. I don't remember 2020 playoffs at all.
2020 doesn't count. Everything was on the road.
Swept by Tampa. Yeah, that's true. Sign me up. Sign me up on the road in Minnesota, or on the road in Cleveland, on the road, I don't even know. I don't know. You can tell me anybody's leading the Central with any division. They'd be like, "Did you know the Cleveland Indians are?"
I didn't know it was Minnesota. Right now, I thought it was.
Pardon me. Do you know the Cleveland Guardians are 5 games under 500 and leading the Central? And I'd be like, "I believe that."
Yeah, 100%.
Of course they are. Insane. Yeah, great, great show, Jake. I think third wild card for sure. Gonna pause quickly, and then we'll see if we can manifest quickly a trade piece here after this. RJ, just hours until the trade deadline. Again, trying to will a trade out of thin air. It's been another week of thinking about guys and seeing guys get traded. The Angels got Dylan, or got Giolito and Ronaldo Lopez from the White Sox. Jay's got Hennessy Cabrera. Is there anybody that you're more talked into, less talked into, more convinced of? Anybody new on the scene come in for you?
I mean, I still stand by what we said last week on the sort of the Lane Thomas train.
Mm-hmm.
Lane Thomas, Jordan Hicks, still sort of like the ideal. I'm really into Cody Bellinger.
Mm.
I don't even know if he's going to get traded at all. But I really like the idea of Cody Bellinger in Toronto. I'm also sort of glad Ohtani is off the market. Not that obviously I wouldn't want the Jays to go get him, but I feel like the odds were much higher that a team we wouldn't want to get Shohei Ohtani would than the Jays.
Sure. I'm
pretty content with him both staying in LA, and I think it makes sort of the hypothetical trade game easier when he's not involved. Because it just takes such a huge domino off the board. That being said, that does make our LOL butt king, Mr. Juan Soto, who the Padres today did say they will listen to offers on.
Why not?
Yeah. They said they'd have to be blown away, so I don't know if the Jays have the pieces to do that. But, you know, if you wanted to throw Tiedemann, Manoah, or Elvis at the Padres, I don't know.
I mean, yeah, we're talking about Juan Soto here. We're not talking about, yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. I think that the expectation of the type of deal that we've been sort of expecting all year, I still think that's what's going to be. I think, you know, the Grichuks, the Drurys, a bullpen arm. I don't think much has changed on that front, but I do think that Cody Bellinger is rapidly rising up the ranks of guys I would like.
I am starting to think that second base is what they are going to prioritize.
Tim Anderson kind of feels like a thing, doesn't it?
I saw Tim Anderson. You sort of continue to see bandied around. The Ryan McMahon on the Rockies, because it came out. If you look at what are the actual identifiable weaknesses, they've been just about the worst defensive second base you can be.
Yes, I believe they've left like 10 plus runs this year on
bananas, bananas. And listen, you can say, hey, Merrifield does have enough. He's enough usefulness in the outfield that maybe you don't need to pay the big bucks for a fourth outfielder. You probably don't need to pay much at all to get a second baseman anyway, frankly, to be honest with you.
That's probably true.
You got Merrifield for peanuts last year. You could probably get another guy, old, good defensive second baseman who can make contact. That's not a crazy expensive thing. Usually it could be Tim Anderson. They could aim a little bit by. I wonder if this is where the secret aim a little bit bigger comes from. Is they aim a little bit higher on a middle infielder that you maybe don't see coming. That's been my only change. Looking a little bit more at it, I was like, maybe middle infield is something that they're thinking about more than fourth outfielder. They just continue to think that, like, Luplo or, again, you know, another cheap, I'm thinking cheap. By the way, I don't know, but in terms of general word for the deadline, I feel like it's going to be a cheap one.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's going to be cheap kind of all around the league, actually.
Doesn't seem like a very buzzy one. Yeah, I agree with you.
But I think, I like the idea of Tim Anderson. I know he's been like abysmal this year.
Just hit lefties at least. Yeah.
Like so bad. But, you know, we always talk about Blue Jays reclamation projects for better or for often worse. And, you know, you could do a lot worse with a reclamation project than the talent that exists in Tim Anderson. Like,
yeah.
I'm not saying you get him and he's going to be any better than he's been this year. But, like, we all know that the ceiling of Tim Anderson is a lot higher than anybody else they're putting at second base right now. So, if you can get him for, you know, a similar deal to what you got Merrifield for, because he's been so bad and the White Sox are kind of throwing in the towel, I say go for it.
Yeah, I think we can look at the last couple deadlines with, or the competitive deadlines, I would say, with this core and sort of get an idea of what they target in these spots. And it's guys with, like, for pitching, they like guys with one identifiable thing that they can maximize, right? It's like Ray, they're like, okay, he has one great pitch. How can we build around this? And with their bullpen moves, it's been sort of, you know, the great changeups, the great individual things. And I think for hitters, it is... You want to say reclamation projects, it's generally been like guys with track records that are having down years, right? Well, that Merrifield was that exact thing. It was like the track record is elite speed, elite bat to ball, and he's playing on a bad team, so he's not playing very well. And they found that and did it. And I think that is going to be, you could argue Drury is sort of a similar thing. He was a bit of a track record guy that was going through a bad time, and they ended up, I think, being right about betting on the talent there. I think that fits the Tim Anderson mold pretty perfectly. I think that is that's a type of guy that I expect them to be in on if they aren't the one to get him. But yeah, I'm with you. I think that Tim Anderson feels like there's smoke to the fire.
I will say for sure. One name that I have not heard at all that intrigues me because it very much fits into everything you just said. What are your thoughts on Chris Bryant?
It's a lot of money.
It is.
It's a lot of money. It's a lot of money. But I know it's one that I've seen. It's one that I've seen thrown out there. Boy, he's not playing very well. Why can't anybody in Coors hit for power anymore? What the hell's going on out there?
But hey, maybe again, is it the kind of thing where like he's not playing well this year? Maybe you can get him for not a lot of money.
Geez, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 27 million per year for the next, to be 36 in 2028 for the next 5 years after this one. They'd have to get him sickeningly cheap. Like it would have to be like, in the league investigates what Colorado's doing sort of level. Cheap. That's a tough
one. I don't think it's going to happen for all the reasons. Yeah. But
I'll say this, Jake. You're not the first person to say it. You're not the first person to throw out Chris Bryant as a guy. I'm hearing more people say Randall Grichuk in terms of...
I am too. I don't like it.
Crazy.
No more Randall Grichuk talk, please.
People feel more talked into that than I do. That's for sure.
Yeah, agreed.
I think that's about it. I haven't heard anything on Lane Thomas here other than you and I sort of being nothing. Like, that's the guy. Nothing on Lane Thomas. I wonder. Nothing at all. I wonder if we manifested anything there. I feel like we could have. And then I think Shai Davidi is the one that... Shai Davidi and I think Ben Nicholson-Smith has also done this. I don't know if you've noticed this, but those two have been... They've been floating out the... I think there's a chance they're in on something much bigger than we expect thing. You notice this?
No, I actually haven't.
There's been like, they haven't said it explicitly, but they've put in that like sources around the league suggest that the Jays maybe like would be willing to do bigger business than filling a small side thing. We'll see. The other thing was Jeff Passan's open up the coffers that runs exact opposite to this. Yes,
of course. Which like, I don't, again, I sort of tweeted this from our account that like everything this year is sort of grain of salt.
Yeah. That's just positioning, I think.
All I'll say is if it's not and it doesn't work, Atkins has to go.
I think that might just be positioning of like the Jays throwing off a scent that they
are. It seems like a really weird thing to put out.
Yeah.
Now.
I think that means they might be talking to somebody that represents a salary. I don't think that means that necessarily they're going to be in on them, but they want teams to think that they're not going to be in on guys that have sizable salaries. Maybe that means
it seems like an extremely weird thing
to
put out there right now.
Chris Bryant would be opening up the fucking coffers, I'll tell you that much.
Sure would.
Would you even be happy? Would you even be happy if they went and got Chris Bryant?
I'd be thrilled. Really? I've wanted Chris Bryant for like 3 years.
You're like, give me Varsho without the defense, is what you're saying.
Yeah,
he's been so bad.
But he was great last year.
Was he?
Yeah.
He only played 42 games last year.
And he was fucking awesome in them. He hasn't... Christ. Look, he didn't... Yeah, okay. I didn't realize he only played 40 games. But he was great in 2021 as well.
That's true.
Played that a full part year is there. True. He's been great in every year of his career except for the fake season and this year.
Yeah, and extremely this year.
And extremely bad this year.
Extremely currently. Fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah, okay. I feel like we made the Chris Bryant trade happen, if that happens. You're hearing it here first. Yeah, but keep him on high alert for middle infielder, Tim Anderson.
Yeah, Tim Anderson, I truly do feel like it's going to happen. Which now probably means it won't, because now I've said it. But
seems unlikely. Let's take a quick break, and we'll talk about life.
After baseball, get out of here. It's time to get off topic. Baseball, get out of here. It's time to get off topic.
Okay, Jake, did we get good responses this week? I haven't even checked yet.
I have no idea.
Here we go. We're going to open up the old MB, which is short for mailbag. Here we go. The first one comes from our old pal, Jay's Retro, who is this super expensive trade target that you'd open up the coffers for. A little play on the Jeff Passan.
I mean, Juan Soto, obviously.
Juan Soto is the coffer open-upper.
And failing that, if you want to open the coffers, Chris Bryant out there.
Sickening. The Chris Bryant money. Sickening through line to this episode. Truly, truly gross. Truly gross in my heart. Could he still play third? No, I'm not even going to let that. the coffer opener-upper. I don't think I would be breaking the bank for like Ian Snell. I don't think I would be breaking the bank for Yu Darvish. I don't think it's pitching. I think it does have to be.
I think it's offense. Weirdly enough, the pitching. I feel like the issues with the pitching can be solved with cheaper options.
I might coffer up for like Nolan Arenado.
Yeah, I could see that.
I don't even want to do the even then, because you'd find a way. You'd figure out how you'd do Arenado Chapman. I don't know how you would do it, but you'd figure it out. There's a coffer opener upper. Anybody else that you're like, maybe they're not available, but I would drop a fancy dime on them? Hard to say.
I mean, so many of the teams are like...
Bad teams are cheap now is the other problem.
Yeah. I mean, like, are the Phillies going to sell?
I don't know why. I don't know why any National League team would sell. They're all so shit. They're all so bad. Deserve what they get. I mean, they get beat by the shitty-ass LA Dodgers, those crap teams.
Like the Washington Nationals? Is there anyone left on that team that you can...
Well, Lane Thomas is the best guy on that team. And you don't think he makes big money. I think he's a arb baby, I think. I think it's Soto. I think Soto's your big one, because then that's your extension signer.
Unless you want, like, I guess if we're talking purely, like, LOL butts, mm-hmm. I mean, like, you could do, like, a twofer with the White Sox for, like, Tim Anderson and Louis Robert.
Oh, I got it. I actually have it.
Oh.
For the sneaky, nobody thinks this is going to happen. This would be a huge change. This completely makes no sense, but wait, it does kind of make sense. We didn't think they would do an upgrade like this, but now that they've done it, it actually makes a bit of sense. And from the other side, you're like, they would never trade this guy, but maybe they would trade this guy. You ready for it?
Absolutely. I love this.
Opening the coffers for Fernando Tatis Jr.
Ooh.
Because they're like, shit,
that's
we shouldn't have signed him to this fucking deal. This was a mistake. And they're like, how do we get out of this? And like, you know what? we can unload a ten-year, $325 million deal on the Blue Jays right now. If we,
oh, I love that.
And the Blue Jays, you go, man, they would never do this. And then you go, wait a minute, he's playing the outfield and he's playing middle infield. Hmm. And he's a fast base runner.
I love that so much.
And he's having a down year. Hmm. He didn't play in 2022 because he was hurt. Hmm.
He wasn't hurt. He was suspended.
Pardon me. Try to snip it in there. But yeah, it, you know,
he's having a down year the year after he got suspended for PEDs.
Injury and PED suspension. Injury and PED suspension.
Yeah, I love that. Absolutely. That's Sign me. Me up.
That's me. It's my friend. I'm glad I remembered that because I was like, I was gonna put it out in the world, and I was like, no, people will think I'm stupid. And I was like, you know what? I have a podcast. People can think I'm stupid.
Yeah, sign me up for that. Absolutely.
Thank you very much. Terry, Blackcomb Terry says, do you ever see a shot of someone by the dugout or the on-deck circle and think it's the bat boy? And really, it ends up being Dalton Varsho. both of my sister and her husband, my brother-in-law, work in the education industry, is what I'll say. And they're Blue Jays fans. They listen to this podcast. And they're home from overseas where they work. And we were talking about the team and we're watching the game. And my sister hilariously was like, Dalton Varsho is the kind of kid that if you had him in your class, you'd be like, you can just keep running around at recess. It doesn't, whatever you need to do, man. Like, burn off the energy. Just keep running around. Real kid at heart. This maybe cuts too close to the bone. He's short, Jake, but not short.
Oh, okay. So he's a real short. He's a fake short. He's not.
He's like,
short.
He's listed at 5'10", which to me suggests he's probably 5'8".
Absolutely not. 5'10"?
He's probably 5'8". Listed at 5'10" is 5'8". You were 5'10".
It's a Marcus Stroman. That's a Marcus Stroman short. That's not a real short.
He seems pretty small, but
5'10" is short. Get out of here.
He's not really 5'10". There's no way he's 5'10". I would bet he's 5'9" or 5'8". Listed at 5'10", like right, because if he was 5'10", he would list at 5'11" or 6 feet, right? If he was truly 5'10".
Fake short.
I guess because the other guys are so big, because Bo is pretty big, right? Anyway, poor little dart. I guess the outfielders are all really big. Kevin Kiermaier is a tall drink of water, and so is George Springer. And that's all three outfielders. All right. loop flow counts, I suppose. Okay.
He's got a stash, so he seems big.
Yes. 67-93-19 says... Oh, I get it. I'm not crazy to think that with all the runners in scoring position stuff, we'll positively regress. The pitching and defense will continue to be above average, and the team will dominate the rest of the season. Right? Right? It's not that crazy. This is the most annoying part to me. It's like, just let me believe this. Please, team. Play like you believe this. Because like I said...
I need them to put together like 6 wins in a row.
They just got to beat the AL East teams. Because they went 5-1 the other week. They went 5-1. And then they went 3-3. It's like, they're playing pretty well. They're so far down the list of best risk teams. It's bananas. They're legitimately like 28th. If they were just in the middle of the pack, they would have like five, six more wins. Like, it's crazy. So I don't think it's crazy to think that like they are due, and I hate to do this every fucking year apparently, is September. And you're like, well, now they're getting all the hits and it's all launching into place. My question is the pitching going to continue? This has been the thing the whole time for me. Is the pitching going to continue? It's crazy. They have four really good starters. Kikuchi's been great. You're crazy if you have a complaint with Kikuchi this year. Barrios, the last couple starts, looked better than he ever has in this team's uniform. Gausman is a Cy Young guy. And Bassett's a great guy to have. To have just now gotten to Bassett is like an insanely huge luxury because he was a guy that you had to rely on to be a number two earlier. That's a great rotation start. Ryu coming back. I'm starting to lean with you, Jake. I'm starting to put some penny stocks into the Ryu, like dip my toe maybe into like, I do actually kind of believe. I'm starting to get there as well. It's not that crazy. It's not crazy. Do I think it'll happen? I'm leaning doubting, but you're not crazy to think this could happen. How about that is your answer?
Yeah, I like it.
You're not crazy. 97, 67, 93, 19.
That answer, I think.
Totally get it. No doubt, Detmer says, what do you think of? And then doesn't finish the word. Tough one there. Okay. Let's see. We got two in a row here. Okay. We'll go to Andrew Robertson. Having seen the new layout and assuming there will be less accessible availability in the fancy new 100-level suites or seats, a little Freudian there, you saw this, right?
Of course.
Do you fear that management is losing touch with the fan base that helped increase attendance in the last decade or so in Toronto?
Ooh. Oh, my friend, they are not losing touch with the fan base. They're just courting a very different fan base.
That's sad but true right there.
A friend made a very good point the other day that what Mark Shapiro considers to be a successful baseball team is very different from what you and I consider to be a successful baseball team. Part of that is okay, because part of that's his job. But I hope that everyone gets to sit in the 100s this year, because you will never be able to afford to sit in them again, is what I think. I saw that season ticket prices for the lower bowl went up 140% today.
That's crazy.
In a CTV article, someone was quoted as saying they paid $15,000 for their seats this year. They've gone up to $18,000 for next year.
Hmm.
So, you know, it part of it is like, this is just the product of capitalism, and this is what happens when you renovate a stadium downtown in a major city. And fair enough. But yeah, I mean, I don't think he's losing touch with the fan base that helped increase attendance, because I don't think he was ever in touch with the fan base that helped increase attendance. It was never in his interest. His interest and his job was to come here to renovate the building, to prevent having to spend money to build a new one, to increase ticket prices, to introduce dynamic pricing, to do all those things. And it'll look very nice, and it'll be very aesthetically pleasing, I'm sure. But are the regular Joes, and as Andrew says, the people who helped increase attendance for the last decade getting priced out and pushed out? Absolutely.
I think worth pointing out in this that the previous regime didn't change jack shit, right?
Yeah.
Like, they get a lot of credit for one good offseason, or one good in-season trade, and a good run at the very end. They didn't upgrade the stadium really at all. Basically at all. Really. Like, I guess they put the flight deck in, I want to say. The flight deck was in by 2015. I could be wrong about that. But anyway, just worth pointing out. But yes, if you're framing this in the way of, like, a year from now, will that reputation that Toronto had as being like a crazy playoff building be a little bit more diminished in the way that we have seen, if you want to trace similar tracks, the Raptors, right? There was a ton of Raptors fans this year that were like, what happened in here? This was the building where it was like they lost to the Cavs and LeBron was like, I've never been in an atmosphere like this in my entire life. This is crazy. What great fans. That's doesn't really exist anymore because they won a championship and it caused a lot of money to see a championship team play games. Are they going to lose that? It's not impossible. It's less people. It's less people. As you said, it's going to be like I'm going to be relying on people that I know can find tickets for me to get me great seats there versus like, really, we could set 100 whenever we really needed to if you wanted to make it a special game. It's going to be a premier ticket, but which, as you say, Jake, so accurately, is sort of Mark Shapiro's job, is to turn that into a prestige ticket, and to turn that into a big moment, getting 100 level Jays tickets. So do I think losing touch? I am inclined to agree with you, Jake, in that it's not so much losing touch as it is courting different type of fan. But I do think, you know, if the result of this is attendance slipping, they will find a way to like cheapen up the outfield. They'll cheapen up the 500s again.
Yeah, for sure.
They'll always figure out exactly how many fans they need to get in the building to make exactly the right amount of money and exactly what price it'll have to be for that to be reasonable. And they're always going to have that math in mind. So it's always going to make sense a little bit. But yeah, I'm interested to see if it does change maybe the loudness of the building. I think the Raptors went through it. The Golden State Warriors went through it, certainly. That was like a totally different place. It happens to teams that – it's just sort of funny. It happens to teams that have success, barring the fact that Jays haven't really had really had the success, for being honest. I guess making the playoffs again is nice, though. Last one comes from James Nielsen, and it's a nice little noodle scratcher before we head into deadline day. James asked very astutely, do you think any of our starting position players could be traded for an off-the-radar upgrade? Who would be the most likely to be moved in a Reyes and prospects for Tulo type of deal? Great question, ooh, James.
So, I mean, Espinal and Biggio, obviously, but I don't know if that really counts to the spirit of this question.
There is two ways to answer this, right? And you are right. I think Espinal, I'll say this, Kevin Biggio not being on the team a week from now wouldn't shock me.
Yeah.
I think he's somebody that, like, you look at all the different tools of guys they have now, it's like it's a pretty redundant tool set. He does a lot of things a lot of other guys do. He doesn't do anything great that nobody else does. And he doesn't count as a starter, but I think you can sell him to a team because somebody's got to come off. If you're adding a bat, somebody has to come off this 26. You could say it's Luplo right away, but I more expect, as we said, for it to maybe be a middle infield, so it would be Luplo. I think Santiago Espinal, and I said this before the season started, would be somebody that I would be looking at in that vein, and that maybe is the... But in terms of, like, what's the upgrade they could make that we thought there's no way they would need to upgrade that position, that one is, like, is it a catcher? Is it sort of my...
Yeah, it's Kirk was my sort of...
Is it a dark horse Kirk where you're like, someone else sees something like, well, the huge track record of being able to hit, and now he's got the defensive chops. Can they get off this? Can they move off this now? I don't think they will do it. I'm not trying to make that prediction. But catcher, like, what's the 2023 Tulo trade? I think it's a catcher deal where it's like the position that you assumed they would not need to upgrade. Well, they haven't got the production that they thought they were going to get here. Then they're going to go ahead and find a way to do that. I don't think that's what they're going to do. It wouldn't really be what I would do. But to me, that jumps out. The other fun one is like first base. Is it like, actually, you know what? As great as Belt has been, he's been very great. Vlad needs the kick in the ass, so we're going to get another first baseman.
We're going to get Paul Goldschmidt.
Yeah,
I think the catcher, like, I would be shocked.
Yeah, there's no
if way. They moved Kirk. The only other one that makes sense, which I'd also be shocked, and they'll do this. They will not do this. But the other one is a far show.
Yeah.
I'm just like, this isn't working. Put him in a package deal for something big. But
he's got all those years. Maybe Chapman. Maybe you're like, we're making the Chapman decision a year early, and we're so sick of watching him swing through fastballs.
Yeah, I think either of those guys would, if they were going to do that, it would have to be in a package for something huge. Like, I don't think they're...
Yeah.
I think the Reyes and prospects for Tulo example is a... I don't even think it would be that. I think it would be, like, multiple.
Yeah.
It would be big. That's when you have, like, non-joking on a podcast Juan Soto conversations.
Yeah. So I think and listen, all three names we said there, Chapman and Varsho and Kirk, all run pretty counter to, like, what they're trying to do and trade them with, right? They're all very elite defensive players at their position, so it's like it runs counter to the type of team they clearly are trying to build. I think realistic answer to that question is, like, who comes off the active roster in a trade? Possibly, I think it's Kevin Biggio with a sizable gap over the second place.
Yeah, person. I agree.
Low key, actually, you know what, Jake? Here's one for you. Mm. Low key, maybe Nate Pearson.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Maybe
you find a team. Yeah, I guess Alec Manoah is my other one.
Maybe you find a team that thinks they are the place for Nate Pearson, and you say, yeah, here you go. Doubt it. Anyway, that's it. That's a lot. We'll see you next week. It's trade deadline time, so I think we'll probably be able to snap react to that. Was it Tuesday, trade deadline?
Yeah, I think so. It's the first, right?
Sounds like a great day to talk.
Tuesday.
Sounds like a great day. Sounds like we're going to pod on Tuesday. So that makes sense
we'll
to me.
Do our classic post-deadline pod. We'll either be very happy or frustrated and annoyed.
I'm going to bet that I'm going to have talked myself into optimism over the very calculated moves they've made to maximize their flexibility while also attempting to get the best out of the team they currently have. That's what I'm guessing is going to go down. We'll talk to you then. It's been an absolute blast. If you have questions for the mailbag, at Less Than Jays on Twitter. Twitter still exists as of the writing of this. So that's good. I have a blue. I have 3 Blue Sky invite codes. So maybe I'll put.
Oh, yeah. I probably have. I haven't logged into it in weeks.
Why would you have logged into it other than the day where Twitter stopped working? Why would you have logged in?
That's exactly it. So I have 2 invite codes. Look at that.
Doing fine.
I'm just never going to abandon the hell site. I've made my peace with it.
We're in the mud. We're in the mud. All we can do is drown. Anyway, it'll be on Twitter, frankly. If it all goes to hell, we'll go on Blue Sky. But otherwise, it'll be on Twitter. For better or for almost certainly worse for the quality of our podcast over the long run. You can find it on Twitter, at Less Than Jays for the questions. We'll talk to you after the trade deadline. Have a great week, and thank you so much for being a part of Less Than Jays.